Number 10, rate the clarity of your image. You will find that the clarity of your images during visualization will vary from one shot to the next. As noted, you will have your best visualization success if you work with the strategies to quiet your nervous system and describe to yourself the shot you are going to hit. The other thing you will find is that the clearer the image, the better your performance. The better your concentration, the better your image will be. Recall that Nick Price says he holds an image of the target during his swing. He says the clearer his image of the target, the better his shot will be. Number 11. Plan your targets in advance. In his prime, Ben Hogan would start at the 18th green, walking each hole from green to tee, identifying his landing area. He chose his targets based upon the best landing areas and what club he would wanted to hit to each green or from each tee. This is a good time and place to practice your visualization on the course. There is no substitute for good course management, and what better place to begin than walking the course, developing a game plan, and visualizing success with each shot as you do. Number 12, play the course before you play. Once you know what clubs you are going to use from the tees and where your ideal landing areas are, visualize your round the night or morning before you play. See every hole in order of play and see every swing and shot hit perfectly. Take a short break every 3 or 4 holes until you finish playing the course in your mind. Give yourself errorless performance before you play. Establish a game plan and stick with it. Harvard psychologist William James made the observation that we learn to skate in summer and play tennis in winter. One author and brain researcher, Dr. Richard Restick, interpreted James' comments as meaning that we rehearse motor skills through mental imagery. He suggests that when periods of relaxation are used to mentally practice this mental rehearsal, it probably encodes a program in the higher brain. If you have never practiced visualization before, you will meet certain failure if you try to visualize ball flight, a swing, and target during your swing the first several times on the course. It is a reasonable expectancy and good practice to get comfortable picking out specific targets and eliminating the internal dialogue or the chatter of swing mechanics. If you try to force images of targets, ball flight, and so on, you will become tense and discard visualization as something that isn't for you. It will take you between 3 and 12 months, depending on the intensity of practice, on and off the range, and practice screen, before you're ready to put a full routine together on the course that comfortably and automatically includes visualization of ball flight, swing, and target during play. This probably sounds like a lot of work. It is. It's no more work, however, than mindlessly beating balls on the range. You will find these exercises fun, especially as you become more and more proficient. A comment I frequently hear from players is how much they enjoy practicing and mastering the visualization exercises. Each player is amazed at the improved accuracy experiences with this strategy. Remember, the mental mechanics take as much practice as the swing mechanics. Images from the inside out. I have presented you with the practical side of visualization with comments from tour players about their use of this important mental strategy. The scientific part of me can't resist taking you one step further inside the brain to explain why visualization works. I have purposely included this section at the end of this chapter for those of you not so inclined to ask why, or those of you who don't need to understand before you follow the exercises listed. Now, I don't fit either of these categories. If someone tells me I should do something, I need to understand why. Once I understand, I give 100%. I won't follow directions until I know I'm on relatively firm ground. For those of you who share this trait, I have included the following summary of the nature of visualization in the brain. As you can imagine, this is a complex subject. I have made every effort to simplify this content, inclusive of pictures as they appear in the text. Unfortunately, in this audio tape, I'm going to have to paint the pictures for you verbally, or visually, if you will. Now, let's move on and see how the brain processes and uses these visual images. We use the same part of the brain to visualize as we do to see. This area of the brain is called the visual cortex. Recent research on visualization shows that when we picture ourselves doing some kind of physical movement, the part of the brain responsible for initiating movement, or the motor cortex, also shows activity. And interestingly, as you'll hear, that activity shows up to be about 80% when we visualize as when we actually do the behavior or initiate the behavior. Neuroscientist Dr. Peter Fox of the Brain Imaging Research Center in San Antonio, Texas, had a group of volunteers perform a simple physical movement while he monitored brain activity. Then he had these same people visualize the physical movement they had performed. His research showed brain activity in the same areas for visualization as it did for physical movement, with the exception of that part of the brain responsible for initiating movement, the motor cortex. The motor cortex showed activity only when the actual movement was performed. Dr. Fox's study was replicated in 1995 at the Institute of Neurology in London by Dr. K.M. Stefan and Dr. Stefan's associates. And they had volunteers move a joystick. And then they had these same volunteers visualize themselves moving the joystick while he monitored brain activity under both conditions. The brain scan showed that the volunteers turned on, as I just noted, about 80% of brain circuitry when they visualized, as compared to the scans of actually physically moving the joystick. These research studies show that visualization activates a significant percentage of the same parts of the brain as physical movement. Two things are happening. Number one, the nervous system is being primed to perform the behavior being visualized. The neural circuitry is firing or warming up in the same patterns it will when the behavior occurs. Regardless of whether the image is a successful shot or a shot to a hazard, visualization prepares the nervous system to perform, assuming the circuitry is not broken by competing images. Number two, when the neural circuitry is firing, structural changes or learning is occurring in the nervous system. This warming up phase of brain activity prior to some voluntary movement is a phenomenon that was discovered in the 1970s and referred to as the readiness potential. Subjects were asked to move their index finger. There was brain activity for 1.5 seconds prior to the finger movement. The initiation of movement took 0.1 seconds. The brain takes 15 times longer to prepare for novel, voluntary movement than it does to initiate that movement. The part of the brain where this readiness potential appears is the same location where Dr. Fox found activity during visualization of motor behavior. That's called the supplementary motor area, or SMA. This area builds a motor program, a nervous system program that prepares the brain to initiate a behavior. Now, research with a device called a positron emission tomography, or PET scan, has enabled neuroscientists to see how the brain works under a variety of different conditions. In this case, visualize movement. First, let me briefly explain what a PET scan is, and then we'll look at PET scan of brain activity during a visualization experiment. Now, a PET scan is similar to an MRI, magnetic resonance imagery, and CAT scan, computerized axial tomography. The MRI and CAT scan show X-ray pictures that are very thin sections of the body part being scanned. Now, these pictures are as thin as 1.5 to 2.0 millimeter sections, and when input into a computer, they can be viewed a number of different ways. The PET scan shows an image of the brain following the injection of a radioactive substance. Now, this substance is taken up in the brain. When a part of the brain is used, the radioactive material lights up that part of the brain where there is activity. Now, using a similar technique to the CAT and the MRI scans, the section of the brain being studied can be isolated, can be sectioned, and it can be viewed as a picture of activity. Now, this next section of the text has color pictures, three color pictures in particular. These color pictures are of the positron emission tomography scan, or the PET scan, and volunteers were injected with radioactive glucose, which is the food of the brain. And that is some movement that is prompted by the experimenters. For example, in this case, tongue movement and right hand movement. When tongue movement is prompted, the researchers can look at basically the way the brain metabolizes this glucose as the tongue movement occurs. It can observe changes in blood flow to the various areas of the cortex that represent this movement. It's fascinating to see because in this picture, as it appears in the text, shows the left and right side of the brain, and you can just see as the tongue moves, it lights up these various centers. The next picture shows right hand movement. Now, in right hand movement, this particular picture, I want you to visualize a fried egg. So that's the best way I can describe this picture. There are two segments. On the right side is a fried egg. On the left side, it looks like a burst of bright light. That's a very white area within the PET scan. And that represents right-hand movement. I'll come back to that in just a moment. Now, in the next sequence, or the next picture, the researchers asked the individual to visualize right-hand movement. And the interesting thing was that the section of the fried egg looks almost identical in the visualized movement as it does in the actual movement. The area that's missing is this white area that represents the behavior itself in the actual movement. And as noted earlier, the area that looks like the fried egg is part of two things. First of all, it is the building of the motor program or that readiness potential as the information is integrated, visualization being part of that information. And that's one thing that it represents. And the other thing that it represents is that the visualized movement represents 80% of the actual right-hand movement. If you'll recall the other research that was done in England where they had volunteers move a joystick and then had them visualize moving the joystick. The visualization phase showed that they recruited 80% of the information in the cortex in visualization as they did with the actual movement of the joystick. This process, or this fried egg that represents the integration of information within the center, the supplementary motor area, this part of the brain that organizes the information and preparation to initiate the act, can be considered very much like loading a gun. Now, in golf, it's going to be you walk up to your ball, you get the yardage, is one bullet, you check the wind is another, you look at your lie, you think about a target, you identify a target on the horizon or on the green or in the fairway, and then you begin to think in preparation to finish loading the bullets in this gun in preparation to hit the shot. Now, everybody loads a gun as part of this routine sequence, and many of us, once the gun is loaded, either point it at our foot or at our head and don't point it down the fairway because we begin to think about all the things we don't want to do or begin to look into and see the hazards. And as you load this gun, make sure that you're in preparation as part of your routine in preparation to hit the shot. Make sure that that gun is pointed in the right direction. The activity in the brain with visualization exemplifies the importance of a consistent repeating routine, this loading the gun as I just described. And the more consistent and repeating the pre-performance behavior routine is, the faster and more consistent the program will be. In the other examples, we're talking about novel programs, and in routine, we're talking about the program being ingrained and learned, and one that it doesn't take as long to call up a routine or habit as it does to call up a novel program. Now, when a player approaches a shot and says, just don't hit it right into those trees, and he has images of the trees and water, the sand out of bounds, and so on, what kind of a motor program is the brain preparing? Well, what kind of a shot will likely follow is probably a better question. The likely shot is into the hazard, or an overcompensation, for example, a sweeping hook. Now, when a player approaches a hole or lie he hasn't been playing well, and he begins to think of all those bad shots he has hit in that situation, what kind of a motor program is he building? That is the neurophysiological reason why images of poor shots produce poor shots. The brain does what you tell it to do. This is also why it's so important to focus on where you want the ball to go, your targets. Or to recall good and great shots. These shots would be shots you've hit on a hole or in a given situation in the past. When you approach a shot or a hole you haven't been playing well, think back to a time when you hit that shot well. Focus on your target. See the ball flying to and landing on your target, and then rolling into the hole. picture and feel the swing that will produce that shot. Remember, when Johnny Miller wanted to work the ball left to right or right to left, he pictured the swing of a player who naturally hit the shot he needed. Miller said he modeled Kerry Middlecoff's swing in developing his swing in his youth. He described it as a big, high backswing with lots of knee action and lateral movement. In his later years, he copied the swings of Tony Lima and Lee Trevino. He used images of Tony Lima's swing when he wanted to hit a draw, and Lee Trevino's swing when he wanted to hit a fade. The information you provide your brain is what you will use to build a motor program. The more positive the information is that you process, the more probable your performance will be as desired. Many players are focused on swing mechanics or broad focus information. They don't see ball flight, nor do they have a narrow focus on a target. This sets the table for mixed performance outcomes. The best players in the world process information about what they want to do and their targets. Again, provide your nervous system with details of information regarding desired performance and related outcomes, and you'll see a marked improvement in performance. The physiology associated with imagery. Now, psychologists who use biofeedback in therapy know distressing thoughts produce increases in heart rate, blood pressure, breathing rate, or breath holding, muscle tension, and a decreased skin temperature, and decreased digestive activity. What happens to your physiology with neutral thoughts and images? Now let's take a moment and picture a yellow ripe lemon cut in half and laying face up on a plate. Now the lemon is soft and juicy. Now I want you to pick up the lemon, place it in your open mouth, and bite down and begin to suck. Now hold that image and continue to suck as you taste the flavor and feel the juice trickle over your lip. Take another big bite and feel the sour juice squirt into your mouth. Now hold that image and sensation. I want you to continue biting and sucking for 10 seconds before you proceed. Okay, continue to bite and suck. I want you to feel the juice just squirt in your mouth as you do. Are you salivating yet? Well, most of you are. If a neutral image, like sucking on a lemon, can produce the physiological response of salivation, imagine what potent images of failure or conflict are doing to your nervous system. Now, whatever you do now, don't think about that lemon. Don't take another bite and suck on the lemon and taste that sour juice. Whatever you do, don't squeeze the juice into your mouth and pucker your lips. Don't experience that very sour taste. Your physiological response to the thought is the same. The target thought is still the lemon. When you tell yourself, don't think about the water, or don't recall the last time you hit it out of bounds here, or don't think about how much you've been struggling in greenside bunkers, you only amplify the clarity of the negative focus. When you say to yourself, don't hit it right into the trees become your target. Your muscles tense and your nervous system arousal increases. Your tempo will likely increase, and you will have a tendency to steer your shot. You have built a motor program to hit the shot. You either hit it into the trees or overcompensate and pull the ball left. So what should you do? Well, think only of your targets and what you want to do. The hazards and out of bounds aren't going anywhere. Hit your shot with a focus on your target and the swing it is going to take to get it to that target. Call up your past success. Think about the last time you hit that shot well. See the ball flight and feel the swing you made to hit that great shot. Now step up and make that same swing. These images of past success provide increased confidence, a narrow focus, and arousal levels conducive to good performance. Additionally, these images of past success are lighting up that part of the brain, remember the supplementary motor area, lighting up that part of the brain that prepares the nervous system to perform. We're preparing it to perform a positive motor program, ideally. If your thoughts and images are only on successful past performance and current desired targets, you're preparing yourself for successful performance. On the other hand, if your images are of past problems and failures and the hazards of the present, you're building a negative motor program, and you're preparing yourself for poor performance. Interestingly, this same process translates to off-course behavior as well. In summary, most recent brain research suggests that visual images which precede the golf swing serve as a readiness potential. And again, this is also known as a motor program. Recall that this readiness potential for voluntary movement takes 15 times longer to prepare for the behavior than it does to initiate the movement. Psychologists have discussed the importance of a pre-swing routine and visualization of the shot and swing you want to make for years. Research strongly supports the need for a consistent, repeating routine with positive visual predictions of performance and outcome to maximize peak performance. Ken Venturi sums up the use of visualization quite nicely. He said, "Take the time to visualize the perfect shot before you swing. When the mind can see the shot required, the body is more likely to make the necessary swing." Now, these guys, like Ken Venturi and Ben Hogan and Sam Snead and Jack Nicklaus, they intuitively knew and they learned with repeated practice what good visualization skills do for you. And you can learn if you will practice the same strategies. There's no question that positive visualization is an important link in the pre-swing and in the post-swing mental chains. It's a link that requires as much active practice as the golf swing itself. Measure your success. If you're going to practice visualization skills, consider measuring your success as you do. It would be important for you to rate each shot you hit on a 1 to 10 scale. A rating of 1 equals the worst shot you can hit, and a rating of 10 is the best shot you can hit. Now next, as you hit each shot, hold an image of your target through the swing. And you want to rate the clarity of your target image on each shot. And again, a rating of 1 equals little or no image, and a 10 rating is a clear image of your target through the shot. When you begin this practice, start with short shots, like a chip or a pitch. As you become proficient, extend your practice to longer shots. If you struggle with an image of target through your swing, try an image of ball flight or an image of ball landing. Now, I'm going to describe some charts that appear in the text, Mind Under Par. And the first one was with Sandra Palmer. Sandra's won 20-plus LPGA Tour events. She's still an active tour player. Imagine a chart that shows two rows of 10 squares each. Each row represents one shot. So we have two squares. First is a rating on the shot, and the second is a rating on the clarity of the image. And in this case, Sandra was hitting a 5-iron at a very precise target. And she varied her target on every shot and had an image of the target through the swing. And if you could see this, you'd note that if Sandra gave her rating a 6 on the shot, her clarity of image would have been a 5 or 6. In this case, it was a 5. And she had, out of 10 shots, she hit 4 tens, meaning that she rated those shots as good as she could possibly hit them. Out of those 4 tens, the clarity of the image was a 10 on 3 occasions and a 9 on the other. She also had a rating of an 8 and had an image of an 8. She had a rating of a 7 on one shot, and the clarity of the image was a 6 on that shot. Actually, she had 2 8s, and both had a clarity of image of 8 and 2 7s, and both had a clarity of image of 6. And the one I've already mentioned was a rating of 6 and an image of 5. You want to note the relationship when you do this between the shot rating and the clarity of the image. High shot ratings show up with a clear target images. Low shot ratings are paired with poor target images. As simple as that. Nick Price told us that a long time ago. Recall that Nick Price says he holds an image of the target during his swing, and he says the clearer his image, the target, the better his shot will be. Next chart is that of Patrick Burke, and Patrick, PGA Tour player. And Patrick's shows exactly the same thing. And again, he's hitting driver, different target, image of a target through the swing. And what you'd find is that his high ratings of 10s, which he had 3 10s and 2 9s in this particular case. All of his 10s had 10 clarity of image. One of his 9s had a 9 clarity of image. Again, we're looking at the same scaling, 1 to 10 scale. And the other 9 rating had an 8 clarity of image. And you'd find that his lower ratings, he had a rating of a 3 and he had a clarity of image of 4. The same thing Nick Price described shows up when these students are set up on the range and hit shots sequentially like this. And the next one shows another strategy in chipping with Lori Rinker Graham. Lori is an LPGA Tour player. And Lori, in this case, we had three ratings. Now, this is going to be tough to follow on audio tape, so please follow me carefully. Again, we have 10 rows and three columns within each of those rows. The first row shows rating of the shot, clarity of the image, and the distance. And again, this shot is a chip shot where Lori is chipping to 10 different targets. And in this case, I stepped off the distance to each of her targets after each shot. She was feeling the stroke. This was not an image. This was a feeling. So this would be the clarity of the feeling. So she set up to a chip shot. She felt it in a rehearsal stroke. And then as she hit the shot, her goal was to repeat the feel. Okay, and after 10 shots, her average distance from the hole on each of these chip shots was 2.8 feet. 2.8 feet. So out of 10 shots, she had 28 feet. If you totaled the distance from the hole, divide that by 10, we get an average distance on each shot of 2.8 feet. So it's a pretty simple calculation. Now the next sequence of 10, Lori hit 10 chip shots, again to 10 different targets each time. Now these targets are anywhere from 10 to 60 to 80 feet from where she's chipping. So there's quite a range in these targets, so she's not hitting the same target twice so she doesn't get a feel for the distance. The second 10 grouping, she chipped to 10 targets and she held an image of the ball hitting the flag stick through the chip. So again, she'd rehearse it, set up, again, she'd have an image of the ball hitting the flag stick. Now, some players are feel players, some players are image players. And what we found was that Lori was definitely an image player because her average distance from the pin, once all was said and done, was 0.7 feet. So it was just under 3/4 of a foot. Her total, if you added all the distance from all 10 targets, was 7 feet. And dividing that by 10, we have 0.7. She holed out three chip shots on the second condition, meaning that she had an image of the ball hitting the flag stick through the stroke. In the first sequence where she was trying to repeat the feeling of a rehearsal stroke, she holed out one. The other thing that we found was that Lori's ability, or the clarity of her ability to hold image of the ball hitting the flag stick, was never lower than an 8. She only had 1 8. The rest were all, she had 5 10s, 4 9s, and an 8 in terms of clarity of the image. So that says an awful lot. When you look at how well she was able to hold a feeling of the stroke, she had zeros, meaning for which she had no feel whatsoever on two of the shots, and 1 10 and 4 8s, and the rest were all much lower. Okay, so we've gathered all this information. What does it tell us? It tells us that Lori likely does much better visually in putting and chipping, in iron play, and in wood play. That if she has an image of ball flight, ball rolling into the hole, that she's going to have, it's going to be much easier for her to hold an image of that than it is to retain a feeling of the swing or the stroke that she wants to make. Not only does it show that, but it also shows that in one condition where she's trying to repeat a feeling and hold a feel through the stroke, that her distance to the cup on these chips was 2.8 feet in the repeat the feel condition, and then in the visualization it was 0.7. So she improved fourfold in her performance. Let's talk about feeling swing corrections. Australian, Asian, and PGA, and now Nike Tour player Dennis Paulson has always been a visual player with great touch. And when he becomes immersed in mechanics or swing changes, like most players, he begins to struggle. Now Dennis's best performances have been when he's had a strong visual image of ball flight through a swing. He made a swing change in early 1996. And he'd been turning and lifting and doing what's called crossing the line at the top of his backswing. Dennis was attempting to shorten his swing to eliminate this problem. And as long as he held a thought of shorter, his swing would remain at the desired length and his ball striking was much improved. However, when he held an image of ball flight through the swing, which is what he had done prior to this swing change, his swing returned to turn, lift, and cross the line at the top, and the quality of his ball striking diminished or returned to what it had been. So Dennis set up and was able to, again, he went through the same conditions, holding image of ball flight through the swing. And his performance was less than stellar for him. In out of 10 shots, he was able to hold a 10 image on five of those shots, and two eights, a nine, and two sevens, and just in terms of the clarity of the image. However, his performance didn't match up here. In his ratings of his shots, he only had 1 10, he had 5 8s, he had 1 9, two sevens, and a six. So for Dennis, that was not, because Dennis has done this many times, for him it just was not working. So that in the next sequence of 10, and this appears on 170 of the text, Dennis, I should say, was hitting a 5-iron. And he was attempting to feel the swing in a practice swing and then repeat the feel of the practice swing. Interestingly, just the opposite of what Laurie was doing, because Dennis, again, now is working on this swing change. When he was able to feel the shorter swing rather than say shorter to himself, and that's a key here. You don't want to be thinking in a swing. You either want to be picturing or feeling. The clarity of that feel, the ability to repeat the feel, he had 9 10s and 1 9. And his records in terms of his shot ratings elevated with that clarity. So it was much easier for him trying to make this swing change to have no intrusive thoughts just by focusing on a feeling. And sure enough, then he hits 6 10s, 2 9s, and an 8 in his rating of the shot. And they lined up very specifically. So it's difficult to say. It depends on what you're working on as you do these measurements, because if you're working on a swing change, you better start to focus on the feel. If you're comfortable with your swing, work on both. And in time, ideally, you can have two thoughts if they're coming from two separate sensory systems. In this case, one is feel and one is visual. Visualization is important. However, if you're making swing changes, focus on the feeling of the total swing through your shot. You should still stand behind the ball and see the ball flight you want to hit to your target. And in time, you'll be able to integrate both the feeling of the swing and an image of your target or ball flight through the shot. Remember, you can have input from two sensory systems at once. Work with both independently before you try to blend them. Inside-out visualization. Picture the most pleasurable, exciting event you can remember. Take a moment and gather a mental picture of that event. Now, I want you to picture the most distressing event you can remember. Okay, again, take a moment and gather a mental picture of that event. As you pictured yourself in these two conditions, were you standing at a distance, watching yourself, or were you seeing the event through your eyes? Now change your perspective and repeat the exercise. If you were watching from a distance, change your mental image perspective to inside and vice versa. Okay, did you notice any emotional or physical changes in your body? So when you visualized standing from a distance away as you watched yourself participating in one or both of these events, or as you saw these events through your eyes as you were participating, did you notice any emotional or physical changes in your body? Now, I've never done this exercise with someone who did not experience an increase in physical and emotional sensations when they were inside, experienced the event, good or bad. Similarly, if they were observing themselves from a distance, their physical and emotional responses were much less. Psychologists refer to the visualization that is experienced within through our eyes as associative imagery. And that visualization that is experienced as a passive observer is called dissociative imagery. I've seen a number of variations on how people approach this exercise. Some players report they watch the good event from outside and the bad event from inside, and vice versa. They always report a greater physical and emotional response to the inside experience. So what does this mean? Well, if you're going to visualize yourself playing a round of golf, making a swing, seeing ball flight, and so on, do it through your eyes from inside yourself, not as a passive observer. The brain scans in this chapter would look very different if the volunteers in the study watched themselves from a distance rather than from inside, so to speak. This phenomenon suggests that learning and visualization of pending performance is most efficiently accomplished from an inside perspective, as opposed to observing yourself from a distance. When you practice visualization as part of a learning process, or when you are building a motor program for optimum performance, be yourself, not a passive observer.
This is the end of this cassette. Please proceed to the next cassette.